It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Before we begin our opening segment today, we have this news. Crews are responding to a natural gas explosion in Pennsylvania where at least one injury has been reported. John Poister of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection says a well fire was reported at around 8:30 this morning in Salem Township, about 30 miles east of Pittsburgh. He says the total number of people injured and the severity of the injuries is unknown at this time. The cause of the blast isn't immediately clear. The explosion caused flames to shoot above nearby treetops in the largely rural township. Residents are being evacuated in the immediate area. Mr. Poister says the well has been successfully shut down and crews are letting residual gases burn off. The process is expected to take several hours, and it is not immediately clear who owns this gas facility. WESA News will keep you updated during the day on further developments. During his PowerPoint presentation at the PBI Environmental Law Forum in Harrisburg earlier this month, Terry Bossert, Range Resources Vice President for Legislative and Regulatory Affairs, told a Pennsylvania Bar Institute gathering that the company tries to avoid putting its shale gas wells near big houses where residents might have the financial resources to challenge the industrial-type developments. Needless to say, this remark didn't sit well with environmental advocacy groups. For his part, Mr. Bossert later issued a statement of apology for his, quote, attempt to interject dry sarcasm was clearly a mistake, end quote. I'm joined now in studio by Patrick Grentner. He is executive director, Patrick Grenter, executive director of the Center for Coalfield Alliance, and Joanne Kilgour of the Pennsylvania chapter of the Sierra Club. Welcome to both of you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for having us.
We have invited representatives from both Range Resources and the Marcellus Shale Coalition to join us on the program, but both declined. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. What do you think is behind this statement? Was it simply something that can be dismissed as a joke, or is it indicative of a real policy on the part of drillers? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Patrick Grenter, Joanne Kilgour, Mr. Bossert says he was just making a joke when he said Range Resources tries to avoid putting its shale gas wells near big houses. What makes you think that this reflects a genuine company philosophy?
Well, I think that this, you know, remark needs to be taken both within the context that it was given in the presentation, which was matter of fact. It was, you know, just after he discussed identifying wetland areas, just after he discussed identifying the topography of an area, he mentioned matter-of-factly, you know, this high-ranking executive at the shale gas company, that they look to avoid big homes. It was shocking in how matter-of-fact it was. And then when you take that remark, which he, when confronted upon later, did not apologize for in the moment, only apologized a significant time afterwards. But if you take that comment in the context of decades of industrial development in Pennsylvania, where we've seen impacts disproportionately distributed on the population with lower incomes, where we have seen large patterns and practices of this behavior, that it was just, you know, something that it wasn't shocking that this exists. This is something that I think many advocacy organizations like the Center for Coalfield Justice and the Sierra Club work to oppose. But just the fact that it was so casually mentioned as you know, a routine matter was something that really struck us.
Go ahead, Joanne.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I think, you know, the argument that a statement like that could be a joke is really concerning, even in its own right. We certainly consider environmental justice to be far from a joke. And I would say that while it's really concerning the comments that were made by the Range Resources executive, it's far from shocking, and it accurately represents practices that many companies within the fossil fuel industry practice. In Pennsylvania and all over the country, fracking and drilling operations occur in lower-income communities, and yet these communities are often ignored.
Now, Mr. Bossert, I can't speak for him. We wish he were here. We did invite him to join us. That having been said, could it have been? I mean, people oftentimes dismiss criticism in an offhand, joking way, if that's the right way to phrase it. And was this merely an attempt to, awkward though it may have been, to acknowledge that this is what people think we do, but haha, of course we don't do this.
I mean, it was just so clearly not a joke. In the aftermath of his presentation, Joanne and I were both there. We heard it from his mouth, saw him speak those words. As soon as he finished, I raised my hand, and I asked him to clarify his remarks. And I repeated back what he said. I said, it sounds like what you said is that you identify larger homes and try to avoid those homes because those people may have the resources to challenge your activities. In that moment, he chose to not apologize. He did not walk those statements back effectively at all. In fact, he tried to just delay and avoid the topic entirely. And so this was by no means a misstatement. It was clear that he had something that it didn't flag as anything out of the ordinary was my impression of what I was hearing him say.
Okay, so you say this raises questions of whether drilling and fracking companies coming into communities are really operating in the best interest of those communities. Aside from this statement, what indicates to you that they are not acting in the best interests of the communities that they go into?
For too long, low-income communities and communities of color have been on the front lines of environmental and economic injustice and shoulder the burdens of living in areas with higher rates of fossil fuel pollution and lower rates of income and employment. And I think that's a pattern that we've also seen throughout Pennsylvania in extractive communities. One of the areas that we're particularly concerned with is the lack of public participation that's available throughout the oil and gas permitting process, and something that would be provided by additional scrutiny around the questions of environmental justice would be additional opportunities for public participation.
What can you tell us about how that permitting process works?
Well, right now, when a well permit itself is issued, there's no public notice at all. The people who receive notice are the surface landowner and people who have private water supplies within 1,000 feet of that well operation and coal rights owners. And so what that notice looks like is it's called a plat. Basically, they're sent a map of where the company intends on placing that well. Now, if someone has a problem, so if that small population of people who receive that notice have a problem, they only have 15 days to object. Now, that's nearly impossible because that requires expert advice and the solicitation of engineering firms, other things that it's really, really difficult to manifest within a 15-day period. Additionally, the erosion and sedimentation ground disturbance permits that are issued with an oil and gas well permit are publicly noticed, but only after it's been issued.
So for the purpose of this argument, what you're saying is that the way these companies operate is that if they can get into an area where people don't have the resources to, if they're opposed to what's being done, they're dealing with people that don't have the resources to fight them. This is being done by design so that the companies can get their way.
I mean, I think that's certainly a large part of the process. You know, we have a member of our organization who told us about how the only way she knew that a shale gas well was going out about 1,000 feet off her front door was when the bulldozer showed up. And that activity, the massive air pollution, the massive light pollution, the truck traffic associated with that, the noise associated with that, that changes people's lives. That is a significant impact on people's day-to-day lives for a long period of time that they have no opportunity to meaningfully participate in.
That's our guest, Patrick Grenter, who is executive director of the Center for Coalfield Justice. I think earlier I said Coalfield Alliance, but it's the Center for Coalfield Justice. Patrick Grenter, and also Joanne Kilgour, who is with the Pennsylvania chapter of the Sierra Club, here with us in studio. If you have a comment or question, if you'd like to join the conversation with them, 42412. That's 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter @esspgh. We'll get to your tweets. We're going to go first to the phones and Rodney from Evans City. Hi, Rodney. You're on with with our guests, Patrick Grenter and Joanne Kilgour.
Hey, greetings, Paul. Yes, I have a farm in Evans City. We have a natural gas. We're part of a natural gas unit, and I've had four pipelines go through my property. And this statement is not surprising at all that, the companies thrive on secrecy. When they first came to the area, it was very clear you were not supposed to talk to your neighbors. Don't bother getting a lawyer, you know, and we wised up to that real quick that, you know, neighbors need to talk and nothing gets signed until my lawyer looks at it. So, they thrive on going to somebody and saying, don't get a lawyer. We'll give you a good deal. You can trust us. My motto has always been with the oil and gas industry is, be firm, be polite, and have a good lawyer at your side.
And so, Rodney, this did what you're describing. You're saying this happened to you or your neighbors?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't happen to us anymore because all the neighbors talk. But, and we all discuss what a field man showed by or a landman showed up to talk about a pipeline and or a right of way. And I found the gas companies fine to deal with if you have a lawyer, if you have somebody who's speaking up on your side and you make sure that every contract is read and reread but somebody who doesn't have the resources, they're going to be talked out of spending that upfront money. So it's not surprising at all that they would avoid big houses where people might have legal advice.
So you're saying that this comment by Terry Bossert was not an intentional, intentional humor, but a situation or an instance where a person in a high position let one slip?
Yeah, it's complete reality. It's their method of doing business. This might be a tad off the subject, but there was this talk about the Pipeline Siting Commission, I think that the Harrisburg wanted to push, and having more open dialogue. I mean, they thrive on closed dialogue and not letting one neighbor know what the other neighbor's getting, because they're in business and they want to spend the least amount of money possible. So, but unless there's some oversight or you have a local lawyer at your side, you're going to get a bum deal.
Rodney, we thank you for that call. And I would ask our guests, Patrick and Joanne, I mean, is this a typical tale, a common tale that you hear from people in rural areas if and when they are approached by drilling companies?
I think this is not only a common tale in this industry, but a common tale throughout the fossil fuel industry and throughout the last generations that we've seen this kind of activity targeting our predominantly low-income communities. A lot of times these areas are lacking political power, lacking organized mechanisms for resistance, and these communities are targeted as sites to be chosen for polluting facilities. And as Rodney said, a lot of people just don't have access to lawyers or other representatives to help make their case and often feel compelled to just accept these facilities into their community as a source of jobs despite the polluting and public health concerns.
Thank you for that call, Rodney. Let's go to Nadine from Friendship, Maryland. Nadine,
Hi.
Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. And where are you calling from? Are you in Maryland now?
Yes, I live in Friendsville, Maryland, but
Friendsville.
I can see both Pennsylvania and West Virginia from my house.
Okay.
Very close to the Laurel Highlands.
I'm sorry, I said Friendship. Friendship is an area in Pittsburgh, but you're in Friendsville, Maryland. So.
Yep, we're out in the Laurel Highlands.
Great. Good to have you with us. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Well, I have just two things. First, I want to thank Mr. Grenter and the representative from the Sierra Club for hearing what Mr. Bossert said, and for reporting this so widely. It's so timely for us here in Maryland. I want to verify that I've also, Mr. Bossert stood in my driveway because they were seeking permits in Maryland. Chief Oil and Gas was. He worked for them prior. And he stood in my driveway and told my husband and me that the gas well up our road would definitely change our lives. And most of our road is not, million-dollar mansions by any stretch. I don't think there's a single one out here. So I think, you know, that completely rang true when I heard that he had said that. Thank you for publicizing it. And secondly, I would like to ask you both, this is going on around the Deep Creek Lake tourism area right now in western Maryland. We don't have fracking here currently. We're under a two-year moratorium. And there's a talk of a ban being passed for the area around the Deep Creek Lake watershed, where there are lots of money invested in real estate. I see art mimicking life. I mean, this isn't really art, but it rings very true here. What would you recommend? Is it in the court of public opinion where we discuss this to raise this injustice? Where do you see us going in Maryland in the dialogue as we see fracking coming at us here to get justice for people?
All right. Well, go ahead. It looks like Patrick wants to take the first stab at answering your question, Nadine.
Nadine, that's a great question. And I think that is, the very question, the answer to that in my mind is building off what Rodney said previously is, connect with your neighbors, connect with your communities, try to get organized in any meaningful way. Because what we've seen from not only the shale gas industry, but industry at large, like Joanne mentioned, is a real effective method of dividing and conquering, of trying to pit neighbor against neighbor to try and avoid a meaningful recognition of the true costs of their activities. Because when those costs are internalized, we often find that these companies, in fact, are not profitable. They depend on externalizing the costs of their operations onto the communities in which they operate. And so I think that if you do have a moratorium in place, use that time to maintain your urgency, organize, communicate, and build your collective power as quickly as you can.
Nadine, did you want to respond as well? Excuse me, Nadine was the person asking the question. Joanne, did you want to respond as well?
Yeah, I'll just add, briefly to kind of punctuate what Patrick said, that it is important to do everything within your power and even things you think may not be within your power. So taking this time to organize with your community, to, as you said, bring this into the court of public opinion and also look at what your opportunities are at all levels to try to put yourselves in the best position that you can, because that's what industry is doing on the other side. They're throwing everything they can at these fights. And if we don't do the same and come together as communities and put all of our efforts and all of our resources behind trying to protect not only low-income communities and communities of color, but all of the residents in all of our great states, because there's just too much at stake.
Let's go to some of the folks who are reaching out to us on Twitter. Veronica asks, why does it matter? What will these proposed notices of gas wells before permitting do for communities?
So I can take the first response there. I think, one of the things that we asked for in response to hearing these comments from the Range Resources representative was for additional public input opportunities into shale development permits, so gas well permits and other similar permitting that happens along with the gas industry. And this basically provides an opportunity for the public to know what's going on, to weigh in on what's going on, and to be kept in the loop about these activities that are happening within their community. So right now, if you live in an area where there's going to be a significant discharge under the Clean Water Act, that permit has to come out for notice and comment. And so the public has an opportunity for input on Clean Water Act permits, landfill permits, coal permits. And all we're saying is that oil and gas development has such similar impacts that the public deserve a part of the process. They deserve to know what's happening and they deserve to weigh in. And often the public has extremely valuable information that can help inform these permitting processes.
Kim on Twitter asks, what defense do people have if companies are targeting them with wells near their homes or schools, but they don't own the land? Patrick.
Well, again, that is part of what we see as so problematic here, is that the way oil and gas is regulated right now in Pennsylvania largely disenfranchises those people. disenfranchises people who aren't the surface landowner because, again, they have no meaningful input on where this well is located. They have no meaningful input right now as to whether that well should exist in their community at all. And what, just following up on what Joanne mentioned, what we are asking the Office of Environmental Justice to do at the State Department of Environmental Protection is to look at these well operations and just extend the public availability, the public information, in a way that's incredibly similar with what we see from other industrial activity. You know, people who we've seen right now banding together, particularly in you know, Mars, in Washington and Greene counties, in Butler County, excuse me, as well, is, you know, we see people in the absence of any meaningful protections from the state banding together and trying to force that. Force their voices to be heard. But we do think that the state has an obligation to weigh in, given the gravity of what we've seen.
And Kellen on Twitter says, stop making low-income people victims. People want lower gas prices but have an issue with the way we have to get it. Earlier this month, your groups sent a letter requesting that the State Department of Environmental Protection review Range's well siting permits to determine if drilling operations have been disproportionately located away from wealthier homes and neighborhoods. Have you heard anything yet, or is it too early in the process?
So we understand that the Environmental Justice Advisory Board, which is a citizen-based advisory board that works with the Office of Environmental Justice, will be having a meeting on this coming Tuesday, May 3rd. Those meetings are open to the public and take place in Harrisburg. And we expect to learn more after that meeting. But so far, we haven't heard anything concrete back based on our letter.
How is this review being conducted?
I think that's an open question. I think what, you know, there's a need to take a thorough examination of not only shale gas permitting as it exists now, but retroactive to when this boom really began, to make sure that if, again, homes that are larger were favored in terms of well placement versus smaller homes, that practice is identified. Because that is, again, a serious, serious issue that needs to be addressed and calls into question this industry's ability to operate in Pennsylvania.
If, in fact, certain individual groups are bearing a disproportionate share of environmental impacts, what new procedures should be put in place? What's the way forward?
On top of just the additional permitting processes that we have suggested the public should be able to weigh in on, I think that would call into question a really significant evaluation of the industry as a whole and ask the question, you know, what are our legal options if we find concrete evidence that low-income communities or communities of color have been systematically disproportionately impacted by this industry. I think it's an open question. It's one that certainly Patrick and myself are contemplating very seriously given the recent developments in this issue. And without weighing in specifically on what we might do, you know, we would take it very seriously and we would do everything within our power to make sure that not only does that not happen in the future, but that we're able to address those issues that happened in the past.
Camille, in an email, says, I have been dealing with the intrusion since 2007 here in Washington County. It is dirty and has pitted neighbor against neighbor and lowered the value of my property and the quality of my life. Also, we have no access to the natural gas being extracted. Again, she says, we have no access to the natural gas being extracted. That's from Camille in an email. It's been an interesting month in terms of how this issue has been coming to the fore and the reactions that have been coming from people like yourselves. We have been talking here on this first segment of Essential Pittsburgh with Patrick Grenter. He is executive director of the Center for Coalfield Justice. Also, Joanne Kilgour of the Pennsylvania chapter of the Sierra Club. And I want to thank both of you for taking time to stop by and express your views on this issue.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us here and also for bringing this issue onto your show today.
That's what we're here for. And I do want to mention again that we did invite representatives from both Range Resources and the Marcellus Shale Coalition to join us on the program, but both declined. Coming up, since Pittsburgh was chosen a 2030 district, how has the city reduced its energy, water, and transportation emissions? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.